Welcome, everyone, to today's conference. Please note that today's call is being recorded. Please stand by. You're free to begin.
Thank you, Sarah. Hello, my name is Elisa Montali, and I'm with the National Quality Forum. I'd like to welcome and thank you for joining us today with very short notice. Also on the phone and working on the project are my colleagues Helen Bernstein and Kristen Chandler. But before I turn over the meeting to the committee's co-chairs, Paul Juris and Kurt Stange, I wanted to explain why we're meeting today. This call is a continuation of the steering committee's discussion from their January 26 call, in which they provided initial comments on the first draft of the commission paper on population health and the first draft of the call for population health measures for phase two of the project. As you know, the paper includes an environmental scan on existing population and community level measures, as well as gap analysis, but it also presents frameworks for measuring and assessing population health, health determinants, and improvement activities. In addition to that, Matt Stiefel, with continuous input from the committee, has developed an alternative framework for assessing and measuring performance measures within the context of the NQF endorsement process. The framework really is truly intended to inform the committee's work in developing the upcoming call for measures and will ultimately provide additional guidance, we're hoping, to measure submitters and to the committee as they assess and evaluate population-level measures. And so today we're hoping to finalize both the framework and call for measures so that we'll be ready to go out for the call in mid to late March. So with that, that's just a little bit of background that I have. We got started late, and we just have an hour and a half. And so I will turn it over to Kurt and Paul to lead us in discussion of the framework.
Well, thank you, everyone, again, for coming on the call. It was short notice, and we apologize for that. We'll try to give you a little more notice in the future. But hopefully you've been able to read some of the materials and prepare. And we, again, want to thank both Dawn Jacobson and Steve Teutsch for the background material and paper that were refined since our last discussion. And also we have in front of us the call for measures, which today we hope to go over and finalize. So with regard to the, we can go to the next slide there that you were just on. With regard to the frameworks, I thought it would be helpful, given the amount of research that Steve and Dawn put into this, for Steve to lead us through a conversation, both in the criteria you used to select one of the five models you presented, as well as to some of walk through those models with us. And we have slides there for you. And following that, we thought we'd also have the opportunity for Matt to walk through the model he's developed, and then as a committee really have a conversation. And I think there are several things we should be listening for as we go through these models. You know, one is, do any models capture what we're trying to say in the call for measures? Are there any of the models we're looking at that clearly do not capture it? And then a question of, can these models be combined or aggregated in some way that might capture what we are trying to say? And then finally, I think it's worth asking, and I think, Kurt might want to expound on this, question of, you know, given how far we've come in developing our thoughts and the call for measures, you know, do we want to consider not putting a model into the call for measures? Because most commonly, the NQF call for measures don't have a model in there. So, Kurt, let me ask you to make some comments, and then we can turn it over to Steve and ask if anyone in the committee has comments or questions.
Okay, the only comment I would make now is just a framing comment. Paul and Elisa and I were talking just before this call, recalling when we initially started talking about the need for a model, and that was when we heard that the call for proposals was going to be pretty narrowly focused on four health behaviors. I think that as a result, largely, frankly, of the discussion of the models, and particularly Matt's model, the actual call for proposals has moved in a broader direction. And so the question I would ask us as we listen to the models is, what effect do we want the model to have on the potential model developers? What are we trying to say? I think our initial thinking about this was that we wanted measure developers, even if they were doing measures that are pretty narrowly configured on one of the determinants of health, to have a larger, to put that development in a larger context. of the multiple determinants of health and actually of the health of a population. And so that's one of the things we were trying to convey with the models. Let's just, as we're going through the models, let's just think about how what they might say to model developers and what particularly what we want them to say to model developers.
Would anyone on the committee want to make any comments or other statements before we turn it over to Steve?
Just, did you say that there were PowerPoint slides?
On the website, yeah, there should be.
Yes, they should be. Kristen?
Yes.
Hi. Is the web working fine, or are there any issues?
Yeah, it should be all set. And then if people, the slides are also posted to our SharePoint page currently, if people need to pull them up that way.
And just so the committee knows, what I did is just pull for the frameworks the information that's in the paper. So if you have the paper in front of you, you can also reference that.
And some of the slides are a little bit blurry, so you might
want to.
Page 13 is where the analytic framework is. So if you want to flip to the printed or SharePoint document, that would be the page to go to. Steve, did you get your homework assignment via email?
No, I didn't actually. But
oh, no.
But I can try and walk you through
it. How fast are you on your feet?
You'll find out. And unfortunately, Don is planning to join us, but it'll be later in the discussion. So I haven't seen these slides either, but do you want to walk through the next one? And I gather you would like me to walk you through some of these frameworks.
Yeah, and I think that the background, and maybe expand on that, that I think you were, that was interesting, is you said you really looked for frameworks that depicted three elements: total population health, determinants of health, and health improvement activities, and all that within a context of measurement. So maybe you can discuss that a little bit more to tell us why, out of the universe out there, you picked these five.
Well, I think that was certainly an important aspect. The other is, as we all know, there are lots of different models about how you actually affect change. And we were not trying to describe that, but we were actually looking for models that not only are understandable and reasonably parsimonious, but also models that can be used to drive us towards indicators, as opposed to understanding lots of things about the process or programs or implementation or coordination or all those other things that we know are important to actually get this job done. So we focused our energy primarily on those that we thought linked in some fairly concrete way to measures. And maybe the best thing to do is just walk you through the ones I have here, and you can stop me. I assume we have the ones that were in the paper. I'll find out in a minute.
Yes, it's what you have in the paper.
No surprises, Steve, we promise.
And Steve, just a question. By indicators, you mean the determinant of health as well as the health of a population?
Yes. Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, we're going to be talking about different ways to do it, but we're looking at things that actually lead to metrics of things that we want to measure, and those could be determinants, those could be behaviors, clinical services, or truly outcomes. And you'll see that they're handled in different ways. And part of the goal here was to begin to show the challenge of integrating the clinical and the more population oriented frameworks in a common framework. In a common model.
But this call is for the population measures, so a framework that actually had the clinical measures, I'm just thinking again to the effect on the measure developer, that might be confusing.
Yeah, I mean that's the focus here, but on the other hand, we want to show how the clinical and the medical and the population integrate together.
I think that'll be important because the focus has so specifically been on clinical that if we don't sort of meet people where we are and then stretch them into population, they may not have a context.
Right, and you'll see, and on the last one, we actually have a model that tries to flesh it out in some detail to show how they actually intersect, because some of the others are a bit more distilled and high level. So the first one, which should be on your screen, I expect is familiar to all of you. That's the basically an ecologic model. This is the version that was used by the Secretary's Advisory Committee for Health Promotion and Disease Prevention in developing the Healthy People framework. And it's a it's a model that basically starts in the middle, of course, with the biological and individual determinants of health, and then progressively moves out through behaviors, family, and the various social and physical environments, policy environments. There are a couple of other things to note about this this one. One is that it really is meant to also depict a life course, so that when one thinks about all of those factors from actually conception through through death. The figure that's in here, of course, goes beyond just that ecologic framework and actually does describe a model that talk about interventions and what they're intended to yield, which I think are of less interest to this group, particularly in the sense of, but it does provide a framework for that. Do you want to stop at each of these, or do you want me to continue to walk through them and then come back?
Anyone on the committee have a comment or a question about any of them, particularly what you like, what you don't like? If we can quickly make that and then move on, it's just in case you want to footnote something.
My guess is you'll be more interested in the ones towards the end than this.
Can you also refer to the page in the...
right, we're on page 14 right now. Yep. In the document.
Okay. Let's move to the next one.
And that's page 15 in the document.
And this is a framework which others can probably describe better than I can, but basically grows out of the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Innovations activities. And this basically is looking at the triple aim for better care, better health, and tries to link it then into the context of community health outcomes. You can see the key domains for better care, which are probably less the framework here, but deal more with the process of care and some measures of that. The second part deals with better health, which are the key factors, which are more our focus, and again divides them into the behaviors, the health care, socioeconomic factors, and the physical environment. And then subdivides those into various components. And we'll be seeing variations on these health factors with slightly different names in some of the other models as well.
Good, you have that up there.
On the following page, and I'm trying to crosswalk here, you've got some better health, community health outcomes, and you can see on the left the reduction in disease and injury and decrease in unhealthy behaviors should improve functional status, life expectancy, and well-being. So the thought here is, of course, that ultimately health is a contributor to overall well-being, and that we can focus there. And then there is the single example here of different measures that one could look at for better care and better health.
Any questions or comment about the CMMI framework? One thing it does, the second component on the last slide, the better health key health factors, does a couple things. It does capture health care as within a larger context that affects health, but it also elicits a number of the different factors quite well. So that's a nice little slide on that one. It doesn't get toward the bigger well-being and final outcomes, but it does capture the health factors pretty well.
Right. It does also not capture some of the upstream determinants and as well as some of the others, at least
although
in terms of the illustration.
Although it's employment, income, and those things, right?
So. I mean, not on the example that they've provided for us here.
Oh, right.
Any other
comments, or we can move on to the next slide? Okay.
The next model is actually one that Don has used extensively here in L.A. County, which is Mark Friedman's model on results accountability. And in general, we have a set of, from the left, a set of goals, then a set of indicators, and then effective strategies by which one wants to achieve them. That's sort of the population health side of it. As you look towards the right, you see a variety of performance, program performance goals and measures that are much more concrete and things that you can measure at the local level. So this basically tries to separate out some of the more operational programmatic measures and goals from the actual population health metrics. And she's shown on here, of course, where the different some of the different resources actually fit in, like healthy people and evidence-based strategies from the community guide. Then you can want you, the example that that's here is from immunization, where the goal is to reduce overall morbidity and mortality from vaccine-preventable diseases. And then we have more specific population metrics that we can actually measure over the shorter term, which are the percentage of children under three who are up to date, basically complete, on their vaccines, given current ACIP guidelines. Then we have a set of evidence-based practices, and these are just examples of those. Most of them come out of the community guide on things that can be done at a programmatic level to actually improve vaccination levels, and then we can see also here the NACHO standard for the performance goal on percent of program public and nonprofit partners who routinely meet the standards for immunization for a specific measure, in this case, right, reminder and recalls. So this
is a comment here. This is Mike Stoto. I think there's something really important about this model that, that some of the others doesn't pick up, and that's the difference between the population health outcomes on the left and the program performance on the right. And I think that in the note I sent around yesterday, that's the distinction between the community health needs assessments that the IRS regulations are calling for on the left and the improvement plans on the right. And some of the other things. I think it's an important distinction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's much more operationally oriented for those of us on the ground.
That's right. I mean, I think in a way it's not an alternative to some of the other models because the other models lay out what are the factors at the different places. But it reminds us that there are two different jobs to be done by these measures that we're calling to be developed.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay. Other comments?
Or
we can move on.
All right. So we move to the next one, which we have in a couple different variations, which are the Evans and Stoddard model, which has been modified by Kendig and has actually been used extensively in the county health rankings. And basically, it is what we see on the left. Is a set of outcomes that relate to morbidity and mortality and some various aspects of that that relate to disparities and specific subpopulations of interest. And this one recognizes, of course, that on the right, those things are determined in large measure by the determinants and health factors. And we see a slightly different constellation or framing of them here. It includes not only the clinical care system and behaviors, social, physical environment, but this one really talks about genetics as part of the basic biology. The bottom part of that then shows the policies and programs that are designed to influence those things. And the next one, which I think is in some ways a little bit more streamlined, is the one that's used by the county health rankings. And what they've kept the distinction between health outcomes and health factors, so that at the top you see the health outcomes divided into morbidity and mortality, and then the health factors that contribute to those health outcomes. And those are divided into the four categories that you see here. The genetics has been removed, but the others are basically similar to what we saw in the prior Evans and Stoddard model. There's some additional elaboration of them here as to what are some of the specific components that go into each of those boxes. The other thing that was done in this model was to actually come up with some relative weights for the relative importance of those different domains. You can see that basically social economic factors account for 40% of the weight for the health factors, behaviors 30, clinical care 20, and the physical environment 10%. There's recognition here of the importance of programs and policies as inputs, but there's really no set of metrics that are attached to them. And as all those of you who all, I'm sure you all seen the county health measures, you basically have a set of scores in each of the categories that roll up into health factors and a separate score for health outcomes, and then one can compare them.
I think the other thing to note about this is that it's very practical in the sense that they actually went out and got these data for the health factors and the health outcomes for every county in the country. So it basically takes the ideas that we've seen in some of these other ones and have reduced them to something that is really very doable.
So would they be submitting some of those as potential measures?
You know, it strikes me that we ought to encourage it if they don't have that in mind.
Well, you can use them even if they don't submit them, right? It has the advantage that they are available essentially everywhere. It has the disadvantage that because they have to be available everywhere, there were some compromises that were made in the ones that were chosen.
It's Matt Steve. I'm actually here in Boston at a meeting with Dave Kindig. Talked with him briefly about it. Told him the process we're going through.
Speak up just a little bit.
None of the measures in their model are original. That's probably a good thing from secondary sources. I think the added value here is the way the measures are aggregated and rolled up into a score. The other thing is that the focus is principally on permanence. It's pretty thin in the topic of measures of population health. At the top, mortality and morbidity doesn't go much into morbidity, which, you know, arguably is a pretty central point in a system of population health metrics.
Right, because it's very action-oriented in terms of helping people then figure out where they need to focus. All right, so moving on.
I think it's important to remember how this whole NQF process works, at least if I understand it right, is that we're not actually producing measures. We are asking other people to put forward measures.
Right.
And so... If either the RWJ people, the Kindig's colleagues, or all these members, these measures actually come from CDC data someplace. If someone wanted to sort of put them forward to be endorsed by NQF, that would be a useful thing, because then, you know, when hospitals doing their community health needs assessments in the future are looking for NQF endorsed measures, that would be an added benefit.
Actually, it would be a huge benefit if it's quite actionable by people that these are not some separate thing. These are data that they've been using in other forms. That would be I think that's the kind of measure that we want to call for, actually.
Yeah,
exactly.
And this is Helen. We actually have a fair amount of experience with measures from CDC, measures from other national surveys. So that would not be out of line for our usual kind of work for endorsement.
So we're not looking for innovation in this case. We're looking for existing things.
Yeah.
Yeah, and many of the measures actually come from other sources besides CDC.
Right.
Things like food and education, other kinds of things, come from other standard sources.
Yep.
So if you look at the social and economic factors, there's the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different categories under that, all of which you have published data from some source. Would that aggregation of those five into a measure of social and economic factors be something that would be submitted for endorsement?
It certainly could be. Especially if they've done the work to show that, that would essentially be a composite measure, that those elements hang together, they have a logical meaning together, and they need to determine whether they're weighted or, I mean, there's a little bit of work if they actually want to create a single score out of that, but quite doable.
Likewise, all of that into a final score?
Yeah, again, it all depends on whether they've actually done this work and they've got it tested. So, for example, I know George Isham at Health Partners has an all-or-none composite that looks at some of these elements already that's tested that I think may be submitted. But again, you know, I don't know what the how far ahead some of these other sources are. I did have a conversation with Peter Briss just to see the level of interest of some of the CDC folks, and they would certainly entertain taking a look at some of this, seeing what they have.
Okay.
So just based on my understanding, the folks at the University of Wisconsin who do actually flesh this out did a good job of getting the relative weights among all of those things that are in those dark blue boxes, the behaviors and clinical care, so forth. I don't think it was quite as systematic in terms of how they got the weights associated with those things on the that are in the boxes on the far right.
It's Matt Stiefel. That's right. It's just a simple unweighted average of normalized scores in each of them. So there wasn't an attempt to try to weight the light blue boxes.
I just want to notice that the discussion on this really seems to have some resonance with both our goals of having something that's conceptually simple and actionable by measure developers, and then actually the data availability being usable for the actual end user.
Just a comment on that, since Kendig just presented on that topic here at this IHI Triple M conference. That's right. It's a practical application, principally focused on determinants, not pretty thin on population measures of population health. And the biggest criticism to date has been the bluntness of the scores at the county level of not being able to detect a lower level of measurement. I think we're going to have that problem with a lot of the districts.
Well, it depends on really depends on your perspective, because at least, I think the clinical world comes with, they measure up, they add measures of individuals up, and therefore you can get to a very low level, but you have a very hard time getting to a high population level. In public and population health, we do the opposite. We take the aggregate population measures and so have a problem narrowing it down towards smaller individual or group levels. So I think we just have to accept that, and rather than being blunt, that's actually at the population public health level, having things for every county in the country is actually pretty good resolution.
And for some of them, you can actually refine them more. It's just that they haven't done that. But large cities that are doing, surveys and things like that actually can break them down further.
Well, and it's very expensive. It's a matter of oversampling, and there just isn't the money to do that. So.
The current challenge that Kendig raised was the ability to detect a signal with regard to improvement over time.
Yes,
that's the sensitivity of these measures to change.
Right, because the data can be quite old by the time you smooth it.
Right, and in fact, some of these are rolling averages, aggregates over several years for small counties.
And many of them are five-year averages.
Yeah. Well, I think we just have to keep in mind the differences between how the clinical world develops measures and how the public health world does, and I think we're trying to somehow bring them together, but we won't be able to do that until we have really robust national health information exchange systems.
And let's not make the perfect the enemy of the good either. I mean, it's hard to imagine alternatives that are much better than what we have here for what these measures are intended to do.
Right. So, thank you. Why don't we go on to the, if we're ready to.
Okay. So, yeah, I think where you are on this is very much where Don and I were, actually, that the county ranking models are probably the one of the preferred ways to go. But the last set here actually come out of the IOM report on measurement from, I guess, early last year. And there are two parts of it. The first part that's shown here is an attempt to basically show across the middle of this graphic how one moves from a needs assessment through priority setting, then an identification of resources, capacities, then a set of processes that lead to intermediate outcomes and health outcomes. The purpose of this was basically to begin to understand the entire process and understand the need to link these up to be able to understand the impact of programs. You can see, though, that all of this is intended to link upward to the to not only health outcomes, but that it's also occurring in the context of social and environmental determinants of health, which these interventions are actually supposed to be trying to change as well. The lower box just again tries to represent the fact that this is all about geography and individual stakeholders understanding the distributions in different subpopulation groups. The next one, which you probably can't read at all, for those of you who have the document in front of you, it'll be easier. It's on page 19. So the IOM committee, realizing that it was sometimes hard to wrap one's head around this in the abstract, developed a couple of models of how it would, or examples of how it would play out for some specific conditions. And realizing that we were talking in many cases to a clinical audience, we took one that was on cardiovascular disease and another one that was on infant mortality. And you see the cardiovascular one here. Tried to point out was that on the left, you see a clinical approach. And you could then look at not only the interventions there, but you can talk about the domains of access to that care and the quality of that care, and a set of measures that go under that in terms of the resources that are available, but also the kind of tests, procedures, other kinds of measures that would relate to cardiovascular care for different organizations that are at the bottom, different stakeholders. On the right, you see the multiple determinants approach, which many of us might call more public health approach, which not only looks at behaviors, clinical care, but education, nutrition, and the other determinants as well, and then tries to flesh out some of the measures and stakeholders that are involved with each of them. We did this for infant mortality as well, and what one sees is that while things on the left in the clinical side, of course, relate very specifically to some disease-specific measures, the things on the right in general lead to some more general ones that are actually the same regardless of whether one's talking about infant mortality or on cardiovascular disease. And in fact, that there's a large level of commonality, and hence our interest in focusing on many of those characteristics as having more diffuse and positive effects. So that's the IOM model, which again, the cardiovascular one is more just an example. And let's see if there are any comments or questions about that.
You know, it's a very nice example, more than model, to get people to look broadly at both determinants and clinical and how the two can be married together. Any other comments, questions? Okay, well, I think the next one we have, Matt, we had yours, understanding that is based at least in part on the Evans and Stoddard model. We thought it would be worth going through the others before we had gave you a chance to speak about it. And maybe you can tell us a little bit about this model and how you developed it.
Sure. Well, as you can see from the conversation we just had, the first question, logical question that you'd ask is why bother creating another model? There are plenty of them out there. So the reason that I had for creating it was to, I think, get some clarity in the conceptual framework of the causal pathways between determinants and outcomes. For example, in the county health rankings model, it just kind of shows a bunch of determinants and some outcomes that are connected. And I think it's important and to think of the causal pathways. Obviously, it can get much more complex than this with any kind of model as an oversimplification. But I was also thinking about a model to guide measurement and to be able to point, in a way, between this upstream to downstream framework to see where measurement fits in. A lot of measurement has focused on behavioral factors and disease and injury, or physiologic factors, BMI and blood pressure and cholesterol. And you can see pretty visibly in a framework like this that there are important further downstream measures of health and functional status and well-being that fall along this causal pathway. The other reason was to, as you saw with a lot of the other models, there's a lot of focus on, understandably, on improvement activities. And I think that's one of the topics for today's call, is the extent to which this call for measures includes improvement activities. And, Mike made a good case for that, but it's still a question about where you stop with that. But the other is a significant focus in a lot of the models on determinants and not much focus on measures of health, on measures of population health. And so part of the reason for doing this was to get a little bit of guidance to think about what we mean when we talk about measures of health and to tease that out a little bit from looking at physiologic factors such as BMI to measures of disease and injury and measures of health and functional status, death and well-being, and that they're all different and related in a causal pathway, but important to distinguish. As I think I wrote in one of my comments, that people with the same physiologic status or behavioral factors may have very different manifestations of disease and injury, and likewise, similarly, people with the same level of disease may have very different, importantly different, functional status or self-perceived health contribute in different trajectories toward death, which are important to measure. And those, I think it's just important to note that those do still fall short of true measures of quality of life and well-being that may well fall outside our frame here. But important to note that health is one set of contributors to well-being and other factors of quality of relationships, quality of work life, and other important factors of people's lives contribute to well-being. And then the other point of doing this is to begin to show some of the important recursiveness in a model like that. This, again, you can get deeper and deeper there, but just to show that there are feedback loops. And finally, maybe two final things. One is because the frame is, as Steve elaborated in the background document, is from the two points of view of the public health system and the clinical care delivery system. The green boxes attempt to show sort of the important connections that those have in influencing this causal pathway. And then the last point is the point brought up, I think, by the committee in every one of our sessions about the importance of looking at equity and the distribution of health. And this is just an attempt to show where measures of equity are important to acknowledge and take into account in a framework like this. So sort of regardless of the model selected, I think one is it should shed some light on measurement, because that's the topic, and shed light on the causal pathways, and especially if we're looking at measuring some of the more upstream factors, we should be able to and perhaps require measure submitters to articulate the causal pathway. And then finally, to give a little bit more guidance and clarity about what we mean by population health, kind of the essence of this work, and distinguishing, you know, among physiology, disease, health, functional status, and well-being.
Hello? Well, that's silent. I guess everybody's pensive.
Didn't mean for that to be such a conversation stopper.
And this is the operator. Did you want lines open for questions at this point, or did you want to continue and keep them at the end?
We can keep them until the end.
Thank you.
Well, I'll just start the general discussion. This is Kurt. I found this walking through them like this somehow a lot more helpful than reading through them a number of times. So thank you, Steve and Matt. Matt, I think your model has been incredibly helpful in our process. I mean, I think it was a pivotal moment in our first meeting when you proposed it and helped us, even as we were talking more narrowly, to put things in a larger context. And so I think your model has already been infused into everything that we've done, and I like a lot of aspects of it. And I like some of the other aspects of actually all of these. I mean, I think both the IOM model and the Friedman model really speak to some of the process kind of operationally about how we might want end users using some of these measures that are being called for, as well as your model, Matt, does that. As far as what we're trying to do with this call, though, I really felt the most resonance in our discussion with the evidence and Stoddard model, actually both versions of that, is both giving people the simple idea that we want to measure the health of a population and then the determinants of a health. And then I think the fact that it links to existing measures that people are already familiar with and in which there's already been a lot of work done developing reports at a geographic level, at a county level and state level, I think it helps people to think about what a population might be and how you might actually use these measures. So as far as something that the call helps to get people's heads around it, and maybe actually help people to think that might not be used to thinking about doing a measure for NQF, they might think, this does apply to me. I use these things all the time, but what I'd like to do is modify it in this way or that way. I think what Matt particularly pointed out to us and others have as we were talking about that model is that if we use that, I think we need to, in the words around that, talk about expanding what that model says about health, because it is mostly about the determinants. And really, right now, it's about morbidity and mortality. And I think that, you know, talking about quality of life and functional health status and some of the others, I think we'd have to expand a little bit on that. But I think that would be very, very doable using that as a framework. Man, I'm a bigger buzzkill than you are.
So this is Helen. I guess the question for the chairs and the folks on the call is, what if anything, do you think we should try to incorporate to provide greater guidance to the measure developers potentially submitting measures to us.
Can I make a suggestion? This is Mike. Maybe for the call for measures, which has to be relatively short and simple, I think that the evidence and Stoddard model, either one of the ones on page 18 of the background paper, would be good and actually incorporate it right into the call rather than as a kind of an addendum as it's currently stands. But make a reference to Matt's model and the more articulated version of it. Matt, I presume that at some point you'll publish it, so that would be possible. Because I think that the idea that this, the feedback loops and all that is important, but maybe too much more than we need for the call per se.
This is Matt. The one thing I wish that the county health rankings model did a better job of providing guidance or background about is in the measurement of health. It's so thin there. In the bottom part it says morbidity/quality of life, which doesn't provide a great deal of guidance, or in the top it says health related quality of life. And they measure, self perceived health in their model. And it just in a call for measures called population health, seems like we'd want to provide a little bit more elaboration somehow about, at the one extreme are measures of physiology, and the other extreme are measures of quality of life. And in between are functional status and disease status and injury and self-perceived health. And that's the one concern, criticism I have with the county health rankings.
This is Mike again. I'm going to change my mind and say that I think that really Matt's model should be the one that we include for that reason that he just said, and also because it lays out the idea that it's kind of a logic model thinking, if you change this, that will have some impact through this chain to what we care about in the end. And I think that the Evans and Stoddard one, at least the ones on page 18 of the background paper, just have the arrows going back and forth without saying, what, even hinting what the connections might be between the different components. And I think that when we make the call, we should ask, as I think Matt suggested, that people arguing for a certain kind of measure should have to make a case for where it falls in this logic model.
I wonder if Matt's concern could be dealt with in a way that actually emphasizes actual measures, multiple measures of health, as opposed to the determinants, by actually having an asterisk and a box that really calls out that we think that's a weakness in that model and the way that population health is currently measured, that we would call for greater granularity there, and actually just ways to get at the multiple ways of assessing the health of whole people and whole populations.
That's a possibility. I do think it helps to, because we do know not everything about, but we do know something about this upstream, downstream causal pathway between physiology and quality of life, and it's probably worth pointing that out. That it's not just a heap of measures of population health, but there's some order to them.
Tell us how, Matt, how you think a measure developer would use that really important insight about the causal pathways and the interacting loops. How would that translate into measures?
Well, here's an example. This is Mike again. I mean, in the prevention, prevent the services measures we've been looking at in the other part of the project, and most of the other NQF things, people have to say whether something's a structure, a process, or an outcome measure. And if it's a structure or a process, how does that contribute? What's the evidence that that contributes to the outcome that's desired? And in a way, that all is much more complicated when you're talking about population health kinds of goals and interventions, because it just because the reality is more complicated. And this would be kind of an elaboration on that idea.
So this is Sarah, and you know, Kurt, I might be able to answer that question, but Matt, please feel free to correct me. But as a recovering measure developer, really how I would have done that, you know, working with an advisory panel, is, you know, what a measure developer needs to do is, first of all, identify where there are weaknesses in measure sets. And so, you know, you do want some sort of framework. Typically we did it by condition and looking at, you know, processes of care or processes of disease or, you know, the epidemiological factors of a disease. And then looking at, okay, so where are there clinical guidelines or evidence-based practices or best practices or something that could then contribute to one of those areas where there was a dearth of something. So in this case, you know, I would have done a kind of systematic review of clinical guidelines and literature and said, okay, you know, in looking at population health overall, where are our biggest issues and where are there opportunities to impact those issues and, you know, figure out where they would fall under each of those areas. What I really like is Matt's comments that he put in the into the revision of the call for measures, because I think what he did was nicely aligned some of the language in the call for measure language, and so it aligns with the framework. You know, I think there could be potential to add some more examples if we needed to, but I think because there is alignment in some of the language that Matt suggested in the framework, there's enough information in there now that as a measure developer, I understand what we're looking for.
I guess my question was about how, I'm trying to think of how a measure developer would use the recursive aspects of the model, and if that added complexity is worth it. I mean, clearly, when you're thinking about what to do about these different measures and trying to do interventions, you have to think in a systems kind of way. But how that affects actual measure development is less clear to me.
Yeah, I think the recursive part is a challenge for measure developers. It's, for modelers, it's pretty critically important. Yeah. You're right. I think the recursive arrows are difficult, but the left to right arrows, I think, are pretty important. I mean, especially with this very broad framework that we've developed, which I think is great, determinants and outcomes and upstream determinants like socioeconomic factors. If there's a measure of people living in neighborhoods without parks or access to fresh fruits and vegetables, or living next to a freeway with environmental pollution, with higher asthma rates, I think it's because it's a pretty open field here about the frame that we've laid. So I think it would be incumbent on measure proposers to say, especially for these upstream factors, here's the evidence that these factors contribute to our measures of population health. Those aren't, the fundamental distinction is the distinction between determinants and outcomes, which I think we need to make clear. That boundary is probably right around physiology. I think it's just the description of the evidence. That obviously, the further right you go, the shorter the pathway is. If you're measuring functional status or self-perceived health status, it's not much of a challenge. The causal pathway isn't a challenge because that is the outcome. the population health that you care about.
Hi, this is Paul. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, sorry. I was muted on the other line. I'm just curious, I was just dealing with the operator, so I apologize if I missed the segment of the conversation, but I'm wondering, do we need to have a model in there? Can we have this background paper published or background paper developed. Can we just, in our call for measures, reference this background paper and reference the different models in it and perhaps put Steve's model in there and basically make the point that here are examples of models that could be looked at to further illustrate what we're looking for, understanding that there are strengths and limitations of each of these models?
Yeah.
I have to say, I'm still not comfortable with any one model.
Yeah.
And so by laying them out, then the measure developers can go through the same thinking process that we're going through right now.
Yeah, Paul, this is Helen. I agree with you. I don't know that we necessarily need to include a model in there, but I do think it would be helpful, and we could certainly reference the commission paper and the variety of models in there. I think the one thing you want to be able to do, and it could just be a set of bullets or a paragraph, is at least put some of this in context so that you're actually getting what you want. Taking the best from these various models, we can reference whatever you want. We don't often have frameworks in call for measures. I just think this was such a new area. The question was, would it be useful to developers to have a sense of how what they're proposing fits in the broader scheme?
Well, there's some wisdom to that. We've been hashing around with this for quite a while, and so the things that communicate to us might not be the same things that communicate to people that are reading this call cold and haven't had access to the discussion. And so I really think that simplicity is going to be really important for the call. Do people have some sort of just general idea of what we're talking about before they get down to the specifics? So whether that's a very simplified picture or whether that's a set of bullet points, or a book could do it. But having something simple that then references something that's more detailed would, I think, might be an important way to think about it, to have the desired effect.
Maybe we can actually do some user testing. The draft that we put out this week, next week, will be an opportunity to see how people react to this. So if we put something in there, we could ask whether they thought that it was helpful to have that.
I think, Mike, that came up earlier in our pre-call. If we field a survey, we'll typically have our focus groups develop the questions, modify the questions with an expert panel, but then we'll go out to, five or six representative groups, or sometimes more, who the survey is intended to go to, and have them look at it to say, is this clear? What does this mean? What does this not mean? And sometimes they'll come back and say, what were you thinking when you wrote this question?
Right.
So I'm wondering if we should do the same thing here, where if we can build in a little extra time to go to perhaps some of the groups that are doing NHANES or BRFSS, or go to Kindig in Wisconsin, or even the California Health Interview Survey, or the New York NHANES, whatever those groups are, and say, does this make sense to you in your context, and do you have any modifications?
And perhaps that's one incentive for us to kind of try to wrap up the call for measures. We'd be delighted to help do that. Tell us who to send it to. We actually frequently do that. We will show the call people in that area and say, does this make sense? Does this have enough information for you? So, again, it sounds like a good plan to me.
Yeah, we've been talking about this for so long, we're no longer good judges of whether it's useful.
I think that's probably true, because we have talked for going on a couple hours or more about the different models.
Yeah.
And had the benefit of all our collective thinking on them. So, I would get back to the pointer. I honestly don't think there is any single model that does this for us, and I'm happy to go into any one of them and express my opinion. I couldn't participate in that part of the call. But so referencing a collection of models to say these are examples of types of models, and then maybe having some bullet points to say here are the strengths in the models we see and here are the weaknesses in the models we see.
Yeah, or one other possibility, Paul, this is Helen, is not even so much just strengths and weaknesses, but kind of taking the best of breed. So from all these different models, what are the key points about population health measurement that you want to transmit to the developers, being model agnostic?
Yeah.
And if you guys want to come up with what those bullets are, Elise and I would be happy to draft that paragraph and get it put into the draft call and circulate it to all of you as we go through that today.
What are folks' reactions to that?
I think it's a great idea.
It's Matt. I think that could work. What I would call out in a description would be in the background paper to distinguish among determinants, outcomes, and improvement activities. And I think we need to get back to improvement activities to know what the scope of that is and how it fits. But those broad categories, to say something about review, look at this selection of models to better, and there are causal pathways among these things that are important, and please articulate that in your proposal. And I think it would be useful to give some background on the measures of the types of measures of population. But those are key elements.
Okay. You guys want to try to send some bullets along to Elisa, what you think is the best of all those different models. We'll try to, after our brief discussion of these last couple slides, try to do another draft of this and get it out to everybody.
Can I add
one more to that? And it's the idea that population health, we need to look at inequities and disparities, not just the averages.
Yep.
I think that's currently missing from the first paragraph.
Okay.
Yeah, I think absolutely that's true. Both, you know, and I think the ideal measure would have both the World Health Organization's concept of fairness and goodness and fairness, where the ideal measure could say, here's the average, and then have a component to say, you know, here's some measure of health inequity or health equity, the difference between the least and most affected population.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see if you can. One thing also that might help is to move people away from just the frameworks to the indicator sets that are already out there and to draw on those.
Yep.
So, Helen, I really like this. I think these are bullet points that really we want people that have much to do with the determinants, the health outcomes, improvement activities, something that's sensitive to equity, and then some examples just that include things in those domains. I think that would be a really clear way of getting the big idea across to people.
Okay, and we could certainly reference the paper, so that lays it out so nicely. Hey.
Okay.
Should we walk through the last slides about the call for measures?
Yeah, can I just, I just want to make sure, is everyone comfortable with that? Is there anyone not speaking up who would like now to speak up before we move on? Okay.
And we'll send it out to everybody anyway for comments. So if somebody's uncomfortable, even if they're not on the call today, they'll have that chance.
Right.
Okay.
Right, and then we'll have some comment later.
Yeah.
We have to leave time for that also, yeah.
Okay. So are you ready to move on? You good?
Please.
Okay. So briefly, I wanted to talk a little bit about the call for measures, and I thought it might be helpful since Paul and Kurt were on the CSAC call with us last month, just to briefly give a quick recap of that discussion. I think it was a great discussion. They really, by the way, Steve, really found your paper, even in the earlier drafts, incredibly valuable, actually, to help set context. So thank you for that. And I think the overall assessment was, while there were still some concerns about understanding the locus of accountability, overall, I think there was a great deal of agreement that we should move forward. And in fact, to the point where we've decided that we will go ahead and have a conversation with the board of directors on it next month, but we're not going to hold up the call for measures. We just thought it's more informational for them. But I think with the fact that the CSAC was so generally on board, we were not quite as concerned. So I think we've got a green light to go, which is positive, and thank you to Paul and Kurt for that discussion. So what you have in the next couple slides is really, I think, just a block and copy from the draft call for measures. Just putting them up there, if there's any specific concepts in here or kind of wordsmithing you think is important for us to put in here, we can do that. But, you know, briefly what we tried to do, as Paul had pointed out early on, is tie it back to the NPP and the three-tiered approach, specifically focusing on community and population-level measures. We specifically said here for community health system and multi-stakeholder accountability. Haven't quite defined that, but some of that is in the paper, I think. And then listed the set of bullets of what would potentially be under there. Is that more or is that all of it? That looks short.
That's just some of it.
Okay.
All of it, yeah.
So there's more in the actual draft call for measures, which you have.
And I think, Kristen, if you can pull up the call for measures, that would be great.
Yeah.
Thank
you, Kristen. So we've tried to, as best we could, just list out some of the bullets of what we think, based on the discussions we've had to date, are the things we really want to include. And we've really focused in on, you know, specifically including determinants and outcomes as being two of the higher priorities. And I agree with Matt. I'd still like us to return to this question of whether improvement activities are in or out. I think they're a little more complex as performance measures, but happy to talk that through. And then listed out underneath it some specific items with some edits from some of the folks who made some comments. And we would very much expect, and perhaps we can emphasize this a bit more, that the call for measures will explicitly incorporate more around equity. We just had our steering committee meeting on disparities and reviewed all the measures, and they are, in fact, all healthcare focused. Some really great ones are on health literacy and other issues, but again, very much in the context of healthcare. So we think we can add that, add any additional work you'd like us to try to get people to focus in on. And, you know, we did specifically continue to include some of those key physiologic and behavioral determinants as well as some of the key outcomes. I think with that, I'll just stop, see if you guys have any comments.
Would you like to take the comments from the phone lines as well?
We'll start with the committee first, sir.
Thank you.
Now, do we have to, should we be addressing this issue of improvement also?
Yeah, I think that's the question I think, you know, Matt raised, I think is a good one.
You know, I'll let me speak. I think we have things such as the Guide to Community Preventive Services that actually do list out policies and programs and different things that are evidence-based, well-researched, embedded, similar to how the the clinical guide is vetted. And those are, for example, measures of different policies and programs. And the implementation of such a policy and program is not an outcome, but it is an improvement activity.
Huh.
So I would hate to lose that. For example, if a state did not have a city or county jurisdiction did not have a clean indoor air policy, and they passed that, that's an improvement activity, I think. It could be conceived as potentially as a surrogate outcome or a proximal outcome, but it certainly isn't an ultimate outcome. So let me just stop there to say, you know, I think driving improvement, especially for things that have such long time lags as we have in population health, could be very important.
Yeah, I'd like to support that too. And this is Mike again. And you know, as you saw, I feel strongly about this. But I've been trying to think through how the measures that come out of this process will be used. And because of some other work I've been doing, I've been quite attuned to the changes in the IRS regulations that call for both community health needs assessments and performance plans for all the non-profit hospitals. And you see the same kind of thing in the FAB standards and in the MAP process and so on. But I think that the hospitals that suddenly have to do these two kinds of activities are the ones that are used to going to NQF for guidance.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, to the extent that if we can help them with both parts of what they have to do, both the needs assessments and the performance in the plans and measures associated with the plans, I think that would be very useful. And so the fact that we have recommendations from the community guide about what works is useful. We have, you know, recommendations from the Preventive Services Task Force and others about what to do about preventive services, but just having the recommendations isn't. It's only the first step. We have to trans-
translate them into measures, performance measures, and we do that all the time. So I think that we can translate the community guide recommendations into performance measures for the second part of that process, and that would be a useful thing to do.
Other comments, questions?
So certainly you measure improvement by looking at some of the measures and how they track over time. This is almost really some of the determinants of the determinants of health. So it does expand the scope of this, but also really is more immediately action might be immediately actionable by some of these stakeholders we want to engage.
That's right, because if you wait until you see the outcomes, you'll just be waiting too long to see.
Well, it's comparable to looking at A1Cs for diabetes.
Yeah. I'd be curious to hear Matt's perspective, because he's negative, Matt.
Yeah.
Well, I certainly understand the motivation to include improvement activities. I mean, why bother with this stuff if we're not trying to improve population health? The question I have, and Mike's comments that he sent earlier were very helpful. The question is, so where you draw the boundary? And in the background paper got me to thinking about that boundary is not so clear, and especially in the broad frame of improvement activities or health improvement activities, hip replacements are health improvement activities. Cardiac stents are health improvement activities. I think we could all agree those are out of this frame. But so where does it, what is the frame that we're calling for? And I think, you know, perhaps it at least ought to be labeled population health improvement activities. Even then, I think you might run the risk of getting into the business of population care management or the kind of one-to-many care management type activities, and I think that's not in this frame either. So I don't object to the improvement activities conceptually, but I do think we ought to attempt to frame it and to draw a boundary so that it doesn't include population care management or, at the extreme, hip replacements.
I think referring to it, using language of population health improvement activities, I think would probably be helpful. As you're suggesting.
Sometimes people say population-based activities, for instance. Again, if you think about the use, I mean, we're now talking about, in the example I mentioned, you know, getting hospitals to go out and start working with health departments and other groups in their community to do things more than they currently do. So I'm not worried about them going out and doing hip replacements. What I want to encourage them to do is to, you know, work on improving the availability of parks and stuff like that.
For educational opportunities, foods,
And in some ways, the NCOV evaluation criteria could help here because, again, they would need to be evidence-based. I think that gets to, you know, Matt's earlier point about, in some ways, the rationale and the connection to how those improvement events actually result in improved outcomes.
Yeah, although with regard to that, I think we have to be somewhat careful because we can't set the bar so high that no one can ever achieve it. To demonstrate, and I'll use the example of a fast food density in a community, where in an inner city community, we'll clearly be able to show disparities in terms of weight and especially low income communities, weight, obesity, diabetes, and things like that. And so to require someone to clearly demonstrate that an ordinance regulating or affecting fast food restaurant or fast food density affects mortality would be something that would take so many years we could never achieve a measure of improvement effort.
But Paul, I think that's very analogous to other intermediate outcomes. I think, you know, saying it affects BMI would be sufficient. There's no expectation, for example, that we would require that, A1C testing and A1C control results in a measure that shows a reduction in blindness. But the evidence would suggest that's the case. So I think there's, you know, I think the evidence could be helpful here, but I don't think the, I think the intermediate outcomes would probably be sufficient.
Yeah, this is Matt. This example is perfect to provoke my uneasiness.
Okay.
Fast food density is a determinant. It's clearly sort of, it's clearly in this framework as a determinant.
Right.
So there's no issue with that. It's now, but we're talking about improvement activity. So the improvement activity would be to get together a collaborative to work on reducing fast food density or adding gross. That's a project or an investment. Fast food density is fine as a measure itself, but what's the measure of the improvement work that you'd want to include in the call for measures?
So I would have said that the activity is getting the coalition together, as you said, but the measure of their performance would be actually fast food restaurant density.
Yeah, which is I would call a determinant as opposed to an improvement activity.
That's right, but it measures the performance of that activity.
And that's what we're after, is measures of performance.
Right.
So maybe just a question of how things are labeled, and maybe some examples would make that clear,
yeah.
Including this example.
I mean, it certainly seems like, you know, potentially a measure of fast food density would be very appropriate, and a measure of a community-based or population-based BMI would be very appropriate. I guess the question I hear in sort of Matt's question is, you know, what's the intervention measure in between, or are those two sufficient?
Well, so fast food density, and then an improvement activity would be to create a coalition to work on that fast food density, which could include both policies to affect the density of those fast food restaurants, and also policies to bring in fresh fruits and vegetables and things like that. So couldn't you just measure, there the outputs there would be, on the one hand, a decrease in the density of fast food, and on the other hand, an output could be an increase in access to affordable fresh fruits and vegetables.
But
so those are improvement activities with
right.
measurable outcomes.
Right. I'm just not sure if you think about it as an accountability measure, the measure in the middle that you described about a coalition coming together to do those things is a measure that you would use to assess accountability of some entity. To me, that's just, you could take those measures and you could repeat them over time and look for delta, look for improvement. But I think what, and correct me if I'm wrong, Matt, I guess the question is the actual improvement effort the measure, or is it really the intervention to drive the outcomes and the determinants?
Yeah, that's the question. Now, taking a little bit the other side, I can see. So here's another example. Measuring in a community the extent to which that community has adopted health impact statements as part of government public policy. You might call that an improvement activity, and that's something that you could measure, that whether or not a community has in place health impact statements or major public investments.
Right.
You know, there's always kind of a continuum in these things, and I think that maybe some examples in the document can be helpful. The other thing is that if there's evidence, say, as reviewed by the community guide, that suggests that doing these impact statements makes a difference, then it would be more acceptable to measure whether or not you're actually doing what's recommended in the guide. Failing, but it may be always better to have measures about the success of those activities in terms of what the density actually is.
Could I hate to be the timekeeper, but I think we have 5 minutes and we've not yet opened the phones for comment. I'm wondering, Ellen and Eliza, how you want to make that transition now.
We can do it right now, and so I'll ask Sarah, the operator, if you can please open up the lines for anyone who wants to make a comment.
I think this prior conversation was very helpful in terms of there's lots to think about here. So maybe we can all keep thinking about it and exchange some email comments on it, but we do need to get to the public and others.
Thank you. To the public, if you have a question or comment today, please press star then one on the touchtone phone. For those of you joining us today using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute button is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, to the phone audience, please press star then one if you have a question. We'll pause for just a moment. And once again, to the audience, it is star then one if you have a question or a comment. We'll go to Paula Yoon. Paula, your line is open. Please go ahead.
Thank you. This is Paula Yoon from CDC. I'm in the Epidemiology and Analysis Program Office. The one comment I wanted to make is, and you've talked about this today, is really the importance of the context. If I look at the description of the call for measures at this point in time and think about all of the activities across the agency that I'm aware of where indicators are being developed to track programs, to measure population health, there are thousands and thousands of indicators right now that are being developed and promoted just within CDC around population health. And they all have important contexts around them. And so the example that somebody discussed earlier of recommending some indicators that, for example, nonprofit hospitals could use for their community health assessments, that's a nice way to kind of package the purpose and the intention and how the indicators would be used. Same with the county health rankings, the match indicators. The reason those indicators work is because of how they've been, the configuration of what's been brought together. Just to get lists and lists and lists of indicators, I'm just not sure how useful that's going to be.
Oh, this is Kurt Stang. I think that's a really helpful comment. Do you have any, so are you suggesting that we ask the measure developers and submitters to say something about the context in which the measure was developed and then in the context in which it might be most helpfully deployed?
I mean, I think that's one way you could do it. The other way that I was thinking, somebody mentioned earlier perhaps a pilot. I'm wondering if you could, with your first call for measures, really narrow the focus to perhaps community health assessments done by hospitals or to communities that are using community-guided interventions. If you could narrow the focus of what you're trying to use the indicators for, that might give you a really good feel for the extent of indicators that are submitted to you, you know, how long they are. I just feel like it right now it's so broad. I mean, I'm just envisioning thousands based on just what I know people at CDC are working on. I mean, everything that's in the data warehouse, the indicator warehouse at NCHS, the reason they're in there is because people submitted them because they're useful for what they're trying to do in population health.
Okay. Well, thank you. That's something helpful to think about.
Yeah.
Operator, do we have other questions in the line?
We do have another question. Peggy, your line is open. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is Peggy. I wanted to get, since we only have like 1 minute or we're totally out of time, what is the comment period, the written comment period for the written report?
Peggy, are you talking about the white paper?
Yes.
Okay, it'll be a 15-day comment period. We're hoping to post a report on the 9th. Of March, so on Friday, for 15 days, and so we'll close the comment period on the 23rd of March. And we're in the process now of starting to pull
the committee to see what day a week after that we could meet to discuss comments and responses on the paper.
Okay.
That's helpful, and perhaps we could use those 15 days or so also to get a couple of different measure developers' feedback on the call for measures.
Yep.
Well, I am going to make my comments via the web because we're simply out of time now. But they basically relate to the various models, specifically the weights on the healthy on the county health rankings. Sort of in support of the Mike Stiefel model, and then also some comments that need correction in the white paper regarding the HHS quality aims as governmental public health systems quality aims, which are totally inaccurate, and then also a suggestion towards the back of the document about additional opportunities for alignment regarding the 6 IOM domains and the 9 HHS domains for public health quality as an additional activity when this was clearly stated in the HHS proposal as an activity of this project, not as an additional activity.
Great. Thank you, Peggy. Helpful comments as always, and look forward to your written comments coming in. Operator, do we have any more? We are out of time, but any more people want
actually,
to
it appears no. We've taken all the questions I queued up.
Okay, very good. Well, thank you to the committee for this, as always, stimulating conversation and lots more to think about than we can ever process in this brief period of time that we're speaking. So the staff, a couple things. We had some follow-up items where we were going to send to Eliza and the committee members bullets on the different models. And we will also be sending out the call for measures. We'll if you have suggestions for who we might send the call for measures for, a small group will come up with for reaction, see if we can modify that. We'll also have the paper, I guess, 14, 15 days out for comment. And then Eliza and Helen, tell us what next steps.
Okay, thank you. So those are the next steps related to the call for measures. And we're just encouraging everyone to, any ideas, like Paul said, just feel free to forward those to me by email. And I just wanted to tell you about the commission paper. We did talk about it briefly, but we'll be posting that again. We're posting that on Friday, March 9th, for a 15-day comment period. And I wanted to just alert you to the fact that we have built a second web page for this phase of the project. This is a phase that is solely focused on population-level measures. And so when it is posted, I will make sure that I have a URL in the email so that you can get to the page perfectly. And we're also posted on SharePoint as well. It's actually on SharePoint right now, so you can access it that way. So are there any other questions, administrative questions, questions about the timeline? Well, we just wanted to thank you again. We know it was very, very short notice, and we just appreciate your contribution to the project and to the discussion, and we'll be in touch very soon. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
And that concludes today's conference. We thank you all for joining us.
Thank you, Sarah.
You're welcome.